Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. In this world, nothing can be said to be certain except death and taxes. Well, were Benjamin Franklin alive today, he might have amended his famous line to include one other certainty: change. A futurist who spoke in Milwaukee this week says virtually everything we think we understand, from education to the business world to healthcare, is changing so rapidly we can't even imagine many of the jobs today's first graders will hold after they graduate from high school. And the rate of change is not going to slow down. Minnesota-based writer, lecturer, and consultant Jack Oldrich took part in a networking event at Marquette University about workforce and innovation. While at Marquette, he spoke with WUWM's innovation reporter Chuck Kornbach about what is transforming tomorrow.
The first trend is just the rate of change itself. It's accelerating. I think the easiest way to think about this is today is the slowest rate of change any of us are ever going to see again. And the students and the faculty here at Marquette and every other academic institution around the world needs to appreciate that as well. We need to change education, and workforce is going to demand it.
And is it computers that are changing things?
It's not just computers. It's a wide variety of technologies. It's advances in artificial intelligence, something known as the Internet of Things, which is a world of sensor technology. It's 3D printing, it's robotics, it's autonomous vehicles, it's virtual reality, augmented reality, continued medical advances in biotechnology, nanotechnology, stem cell research. All of these are moving at a really fast pace. And from my perspective as a futurist, no industry is going to look as it looks today in 10 years' time. And both industry needs to understand that, and our teachers and our professors need to begin preparing our students for a potentially radically different future.
Is it competition? Everybody wants to be the first with something? What's going on?
First, it is. Our tools themselves are getting exponentially more powerful. Now we have advances in quantum computing, which is speeding up advances in material science and drug discovery. But the other accelerants are money. Capital is fueling a lot of these advances. And then just the sheer fact that half the globe now has access to a computer in their hand. And so we have 4 million individuals who are educating themselves on the internet, who are entrepreneurial in spirit, and are bringing different perspectives to a lot of longstanding and once traditional businesses.
And you're saying institutions are going to have to adjust. How does education need to adjust, for example?
Education needs to adjust by understanding. I'm going to sum it up for you in 7 words. I say to education institutions, give up on answers, stick with questions. In a world that's accelerating as fast as ours, nobody has the answer. And so that then means we have to ask better questions about the future. But the problem is, you know when kids are the most curious, when they ask the most questions? It's when they're 4 years old. But then as soon as they get into our schools, they become less and less curious, which is doing them a great disservice, because we need to tap into that curiosity and that creativity, because that's what's going to keep them flexible and adaptable in this ever-changing, accelerating world.
Teaching the kids how to learn is an old phrase. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Absolutely. But what this then means, I would argue, is that teachers and professors are going to have to unlearn what it is they think their job is. In many cases, they think it is imparting knowledge to younger people. And that's not to say there isn't still a certain role for that, but I would say they need to change their skill set to say, how do we help kids ask better questions? How do we keep them curious, creative? How do we get them more comfortable with playing around with different ideas, disparate ideas from different academic disciplines, to see how they might come together and lead to some new insights?
And from what you're seeing, are the schools, are the universities making that change, or do they have a long ways to go?
No, they're not. They have a long way to go. Here's another quote that I think will, it certainly got my attention and it should get your listeners' attention. 65% of all kindergartners today are going to be working in jobs and industries that don't even exist by the time they graduate from high school. Now, what that means is it's very easy to see which jobs might go away. Retail clerks, truck drivers, AI is going to put some banking and doctoring and lawyer jobs out. It's far more difficult to imagine those jobs that don't yet exist. But just because we can't imagine what those jobs might be doesn't mean that someone else won't imagine. And so this is where it gets back to creativity and curiosity and the power of questions. From my perspective as a futurist, there's going to be no shortage of problems in the world. And as long as there are problems, there are going to be opportunities. And we need to figure out how to address affordable housing, how to address climate change, how to address and create ever more sustainable energy sources. How do we lower the cost of education, particularly higher education? I mean, I'm here on the campus of Marquette University. I don't know what the tuition is, but I know it's a private university and it's not cheap. It's simply not sustainable. And it's incumbent upon the Marquette universities of the world to change and leverage these new technologies to deliver better, more effective education at a lower price.
And the same could go for public universities as well.
Oh, yes. And it has to, because it's not just going to be the healthcare and the manufacturing and the trucking industry that are going to be disrupted. Higher education has the potential of being absolutely disrupted. In 10 years' time, the possibility that only half of the colleges and universities that currently exist will still be in existence in 10 years' time, from my perspective as a futurist, it is well within the realm of possibility.
That's pretty bold.
It is, but think about this. 10 years ago, I don't think anybody was thinking that the business model of strangers giving strangers rides was going to disrupt the taxi industry, and yet it has. And today, Uber and Lyft, market cap of $100 billion, which makes them more valuable than Ford, General Motors, and Fiat Chrysler combined. You can't tell me that there might not be some entrepreneur out there who says, I have a better way to deliver what higher education is currently delivering at a fraction of the cost. I might not be able to do it, but that's not to say someone in this world of 7.5 billion people might not come up with a better way to educate people.
And the education issue is important as you're preparing people for the workforce, because the workforce is changing as well. Is that right? Or the workplaces?
Yes. These industries, they feel the effect of all of the advances in artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, the transition from 4 to 5G, and they recognize they need a different type of worker, a worker who is more flexible, who's more adaptable, who's better at solving problems, who is constantly curious, who's really taken this idea of lifelong learning, not just to be a cliche, but to be the life skill that's going to keep them relevant in the future, that they're going to have to constantly learn. And so going back to higher education, I think one of the things they have to unlearn is the idea that education is this four-year term, that you can then somehow imbue people with everything that they need to know, and for the next 40, 50 years of their career, they're going to be able to adjust. In tomorrow's world of change, we all have to become lifelong learners. And I think that represents a huge opportunity for universities to start reaching out to people in their late 20s, early 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, even later in life.
The bottom line matters for the workers, too, if they're looking down the road of retirement someday or buying a house or at least a nice apartment. This matters for real life.
Absolutely. If anyone thinks that they can have essentially a middle-class lifestyle without lifelong learning, they're simply deluding themselves. Every industry is going to be affected by change, and we all need to embrace lifelong learning.
So you've looked at and written about trends transforming tomorrow. Are these education ones key, and what else is on the horizon?
What else is on the horizon? Well, I think, let me just tell you why I'm personally optimistic about the future. Let me just paint a scenario. In the future, I think many people will have cheap, clean, abundant, affordable, renewable energy. I think that healthcare might be a fraction of the cost of what it is today. Higher education costs are going to go down. Housing might become more affordable, and transportation costs are going to go down. You might think that I'm a wild-eyed optimist, but let me just walk you through those. Transportation costs, at least if you live in the city, Uber and Lyft and advances in autonomous vehicles, more and more people are going to be able to survive without ever owning a car. So they won't have to spend $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 on a newer used car. They won't have to pay for parking. They won't have to pay for insurance. So suddenly they have more money available in which to put a down deposit on a house. Advances in 3D manufacturing are getting really good. There are already some companies who are 3D printing houses at a fraction of the cost. So affordable housing might come down. The medical advances in the very near future, we should be able to prevent disease from ever occurring in the first place. That diagnostic technology is getting so good. So instead of waiting until you get sick and then providing you treatment, let's just prevent it from ever happening in the first place. And that potentially has the opportunity to save trillions of dollars in healthcare costs. And then the advances in renewable energy, solar, battery power technology might allow you to disconnect from your local utility company. So clean energy, preventative health care, lower cost, food, housing, transportation, that's a pretty good future.
But the climate is changing, global warming. Is that a dark cloud, and no pun intended?
It's a really dark cloud. Climate change is real. And I always tell people, the industry that's going to settle this is the insurance industry. Why? Because they look at science and they look at data. And the insurance industry, some companies have now stopped insuring the coal industry because they understand it's a future liability. They're going to stop insuring properties along the Florida coastline. Why? Because science and data tells them that's a bad deal and we're not going to do it. So from my perspective, this isn't a political issue. This is a science issue, and the science is overwhelmingly real. But I will say the advances in renewable energy are real, and I think the days, coal are certainly numbered. Natural gas, I think, is even going to be numbered, that as we have continued advances in battery technology, renewable energy is going to get really good and really affordable. So I'm optimistic on that front.
What about chronic problems, street violence, gun violence, poverty? Are those going to stay with us, or does the future hold promise on those?
Really good question. As a futurist, the most difficult thing for anyone to predict is how humans are going to react to all of this. And so, unfortunately, one way to understand what's going to survive in the future is to look back and see what has survived for thousands of years. And unfortunately, poverty and homelessness and war have existed. But it's hard for most people to understand, but this is a factual statement. Today is the best time to ever have been alive in human history. The idea that you might die from poverty, from war, from famine, has never been lower. Now, that is not to say that those things don't still exist, but the odds and the numbers have been getting down. And so while I don't think we can eliminate any of those issues, I think the possibility that poverty and war and gun violence may decrease in the future is a possibility.
Talk about one or two things that could change history in a big way. I mean, very significantly in Wisconsin, the opioid crisis is being blamed for helping lower life expectancy. So what about things like opioid deaths, other things that could creep in or barge in and affect what you're saying?
One of the biggest things that could curtail the future is a massive cyber security hack or attack on a power plant, on a chemical plant, on our satellites in the sky. If our global communication system went down, or if the utility grid were hacked for a considerable amount of time, that could change a lot of things. That a lot of the technologies I talk about do have positive implications, but in a world of more powerful computers, billions and then trillions of sensors, they can be hacked. And so we have to be aware of these what are called black swan events. Highly unlikely events, but if they do happen, they are game changers. And let me just tell you one other that is very real, a solar storm. Most people don't worry about solar weather, but a solar storm could fry every satellite in the sky, which would throw the world into global chaos. Is that likely to happen? No, it's not likely to happen, but if it does, everything changes.
So you're a former state official in Minnesota with long-range planning. When you talk to officials now, do you tell them, have a backup plan?
Oh, absolutely. And I always think that human anatomy is a wonderful analogy. I mean, if an economist was developing the human body, they would say, oh, two lungs, that's inefficient. You can just get by with one. And we can survive with one. But Mother Nature has built in sort of this beautiful redundant system that in the event that we do puncture our lung, we at least can survive long enough to potentially repair the other one. And I think as we think about the future, we're going to have to get used to this idea of how do we build in some strategic inefficiency into our system? How do we have redundant systems? Yes, it's going to cost a little more, and the economists aren't going to be happy, and the shareholders might gripe, but they're going to be very, very thankful if there is one of those rare events that we have these backup systems. And so that is a message that I deliver to political officials, but they're always watching the bottom line, and they're really just looking out 2 or 4 years. They're not thinking long-term, unfortunately, and we need more long-term thinkers in public office and in the citizenry. And maybe that's a wonderful way to end. If anything, what our educational system and the higher ed institutions should be doing is educating children today to understand they're stewards not just of themselves and maybe their kids or grandkids, but 5, 7, 14 generations out.
Jack Ulrich is a Minnesota-based writer, lecturer, and consultant. He spoke with WUWM's innovation reporter Chuck Wormbach while he was in town to speak at Marquette University.